So think about it now. Charity needs two basic things to succeed, right? It needs people to ask for money, and it needs people who have plenty of money to give. Two basic components of charity. Our next guest makes the argument that if you want to have an impact, maybe don't be one of the askers, or maybe don't volunteer at your local soup kitchen. Don't give blood necessarily, and really forget the job at the nonprofit. If you want to have an impact in charity, get rich on Wall Street. Be one of the people with lots of money to give. It's a theory proposed by Oxford ethicist William McCaskill in a piece he's written for the business website Quartz. If you donate half your earnings from a high-paying finance job, you can make a much bigger difference than you would taking a job at a charity. William, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hello.
Very young-looking William McCaskill, so you're just starting out.
Yeah, that's right.
You haven't made your first million yet.
No, not yet.
I see.
Hope to over my life.
Outline your argument, won't you?
Well, there are three big arguments in favor of this idea of what I call earning to give. The first is just the sheer financial discrepancy between different career paths. If I take a job in the city and donate just half of my earnings, well, I'm still able to pay for two charity workers in my place. So it's just almost trivially true that I do twice as much good. The second big consideration is that making a difference requires doing something that wouldn't have happened otherwise. If I decide not to go to work in the charity sector, someone else will be in my place, doing the same good work. In contrast, if I decide not to go into the city and donate a lot of money, someone else will be that banker or that trader in my place, but they wouldn't be donating the same amount, so the difference I make wouldn't have happened otherwise.
When you say city, you mean City of London, the financial district.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Wall
okay.
Street. Yeah.
Just to be clear, a sort of a synonym for Wall Street. You have noticed, though, if you hang around the city or Wall Street, that a lot of the very well-paid bankers and investment bankers don't seem to spend a lot of time hiring charity workers or doing the sorts of donations that you envision.
That's right. That's a shame. I wish many more people on Wall Street were doing this sort of activity. But it's exactly that that means you can have a bigger impact, because the fact that the person who would have been in your shoes wouldn't have been donating means you can have a big, even bigger impact. And if you can influence a few of your colleagues, well, that could double or triple your impact again.
Now, how is this any different from what George Soros says all the time? I mean, he's made billions and billions of dollars, and he insists, and Warren Buffett does sort of the same, and Bill Gates came to a little late, but is now, you know, fully and completely devoted to charity, to giving back, to having an impact, and obviously the fact that they're billionaires gives them a lot of impact. But that's something they did over the course of their whole lives. How is what you're suggesting any different than just hoping you get rich and then being a really good person once you do?
So there are a couple of differences. So Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, I don't think, deliberately went in to make a lot of money in order to give it.
I'm with you on that. They were pursuing
that for their own ends and then had an ethical realization later on. In contrast, I'm suggesting that we aim to make a lot of money right from the start. The second thing that's different is that this argument doesn't just apply to billionaires. I'm planning to be an academic. I'm not going to be the wealthiest person, but I'm planning to give 50% of my earnings over the course of my life. So even on just a moderate salary, that will allow me to save hundreds of lives in the course of my life.
So think of yourself as a foundation. Don't wait until you're rich and then make a foundation with some of the scraps that you have extra.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because it's never too early to start giving, especially if you don't start giving right from the start, even when you're in the early stages of your career. Well, maybe you'll be seduced by the nice cars and the yachts and you won't be giving so much later on.
Well, that is a problem, isn't it? And is that why you're going into academics and not actually going onto Wall Street and try to shoot for the stars here, because you're going to be tempted by the yachts and the ski vacations?
In my case, the reason I'm becoming an academic is because I think I can do even more good through that. I mean, trivially, if I can convince two people to earn to give, then, well, I've done twice as much impact as I would have done. In order to prevent people from burning out or becoming influenced, I've formed an organization called 80,000 Hours, which is the number of hours you typically work in your life. And it'll provide a supportive community for people who are planning to pursue careers like this and other careers where they can make a really huge impact.
Do you have a religious background?
No, I don't.
No,
exactly.
You know, this reminds me of tithing that goes on in organized religion, particularly Christian religion. But there's also the zakat, which is a prescription to give in the Islamic tradition. But all people are supposed to take a percentage of their income and tithe it to charity. In many cases, just given directly to the church. this is a 50% tithe you're talking about here, right?
Yeah, well, people have been tithing for millennia now, and tithing even when they were living on far lower incomes than we're currently living on, especially people going to work in Wall Street. The main difference I'd have with tithing is I don't think you should give to the church. I think that there are extremely cost-effective charities working in the developing world. You can literally save a life for about $2,000, even once you've taken into account all administration, distribution costs, and so on.
But what the church has as an advantage is a pretty good marketing pitch for tithing, in the sense that there's a community there, there's an identity associated with being with the church. What you're proposing is a kind of tithe ethics ideology for the non-religious, who are sort of lone guns, who can basically express the same kinds of values and set up their income and their resources to do that.
Yeah, I think that's not a bad way of construing it. Whereas the church can offer eternal happiness in the afterlife as a reward, perhaps I can't offer something quite that big, but I can say it definitely leads to a more meaningful, more fulfilled life, I think.
Which is what young people are reportedly looking for in this generation.
That's exactly right. I think we're beyond the level where people simply want to make a buck and really want to do something more meaningful with their lives.
When did you know you were beyond that level? At what age?
I think probably quite early on. I had the plans to give 50% of my earnings when I was still in school. But it was only really once coming to Oxford and meeting some other people who had very similar aims that I started taking that idea seriously.
So what is your field of academics?
So I work in ethics or moral philosophy. So I really try and work on how can I as an individual do as much good as I can in the world? It's a question that's on the mind of many young people, but it hasn't actually been studied that much within the academy.
And what traditional philosopher most influences you to come to this particular set of ideas?
The main philosophers who influence me are Mill, Bentham, Peter Singer, generally philosophers in the utilitarian tradition, where the idea is the purpose of life is just to do as much good as you can, where doing good means making other people as happy as possible and eliminating suffering wherever you can.
And Peter Singer, of course, makes some very tough choices about people whose lives are worth living or not worth living, right?
That's right. Peter Singer makes some arguments that I don't necessarily agree with. He sometimes focuses on things like abortion or questions to do with thou shalt not, whereas I'm more interested in the thou shall. I'm interested in how can you do as much good as you can.
All right. So William McCaskill, you've got about 25 seconds here. Pitch to our audience how they can organize their lives specifically starting today to do what you think is to give the most good.
Okay. It's 80,000 hours of your life, and we have a website, 80,000hours.org, which you can go onto and you can get free evidence-based one-on-one advice. It's a huge decision. It's probably the most important decision you'll make in your life, but you have the opportunity to save hundreds of lives. So if you take our advice, then you'll be able to maximize your impact.
William McCaskill, a PhD student at Oxford and a contributor to the blog Quartz. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The Wall Street folks, the real unsung heroes of charity. Are there other unsung heroes that deserve more credit in your opinion? Mark from Topeka, Kansas gave us this on our Facebook page. Julia Child, prior to the 60s, American cuisine was mostly garbage. Fresh ingredients were unavailable. It was she who told housewives to ask their grocers for ingredients, making their availability more widespread. My grandmother and my mom and my aunts, I'd honestly say that any names I come up with aren't published, says Jason. The people I admire the most are the people who make a real effort to help people. Tell us about the unsung heroes you admire at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post to our site, facebook.com/The Takeaway. I'm John Huckabee. This is The Takeaway.